Desire, that's what we're going to be talking about today, and we're really excited you're here with us. My name's Kurt, and whether you're here for the first time or you're here every single weekend, we just consider it a privilege that you've joined us as we start 2018. And during this series, we're doing something really kind of cool. We're giving you some reflection questions. You might not think that's cool. We think it's cool because we know that the more you process what we talk about on the weekends during the week, the deeper things take root in our lives. And so we're going to give these to you kind of at the end of the message this morning, and don't worry about writing them down. We'll give you a couple options to receive them. We just believe, as I said, there's a synergy that happens as we continue to kind of dig down into what is it that we want as we head into 2018. So last week, we looked at this idea of how your vision for 2018, whatever you're looking at, whatever it is you're looking to go after or the place you want to be, is the direction your life is going to go. And so we have to make sure we're asking the right questions and looking at the right things. And so last week we asked the question, what is it that you want? And I want to ask that question again today as we start this morning. You know, what is it you want in 2018? And as Eric said, it's not a trick question, but it is a tricky question. And the reason it's kind of tricky is because there's a lot of things that get in the way. Some of you had trouble answering that question last week when you sat down to write, okay, what is it that I really want? Because you kind of have to keep digging, okay, well, once I figure out what I want, well, why do I want that? And then why do I want that? And so, you know, one of the things we looked at last week is that one of the things we want, and you may not say this out loud, but you want your own way, right? We all want our own way. If we're really honest, and when we get our own way, oftentimes we lose our way, or oftentimes when we get our own way, we actually kind of get in the way of ourselves really getting to the place that we really want. We also said that whatever we want to do, we're going to do it. Whenever it comes to what we want to do, we're going to do it. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. And we all probably could tell a story about a time where we knew exactly the right thing to do, and yet in that moment, we did what we wanted to do, even though we're advised to do something different. And so that resulted in us being in a place we didn't want to be. And then another thing we looked at is how, that, you know, whatever it is you want, when do you want it? Now, right? You want it right now. And again, we all probably could tell a story about a time when we got exactly what we wanted right now, and yet in the long run, it undermined our hopes, our dreams, our aspirations, whatever we were really looking to ultimately get toward because we got what we wanted right now. And then we began to kind of, you know, wade into this whole idea of, you know, kind of lurking in the shadows of what we want, this kind of realm of our wants and desires, is something much, much deeper. And we don't go to this deeper level very often, but it's this whole idea of what we value. And this is where we're going to be going over the next few weeks. And the reason I say lurking in the shadows is because, you know, the media is not going to help you with this. All right, the median's all about what you want and what do you want right now, and here's how you can get it. Our culture is not going to help you with this. Most of our relationships aren't going to help us discover what it is we really value. You know, and so lurking in the shadows, just a bit deeper than what we want, you know, that what I want now, you know, what do I want her to do, what I want him to do, what I want my parents not to know, you know, lurking a bit deeper than that, we get into the area of value. And then even deeper than that, which is what we're going to get into next week and the week after, are even deeper questions like, you know, what kind of person do you want to be? And what about your character? And what about your legacy? See, this is where we really get into what we value. And like legacy, I didn't even know, I always thought legacy was like what happened when you died, right? After you die is your legacy. And I thought, well, I don't really care about that because I'm going to be dead. So it doesn't matter, you know, for the most part. Yet, you know, your legacy isn't just when you're dead. And so, you know, for those of you who are junior high and senior high students in the room or college students, you know, when you graduate, you're going to have a legacy. You know, and so the question is, are they going to say good things or bad things or nothing about you? That's going to be your legacy. Or, you know, moms and dads, if you have young children in your home, what are your kids going to say about their growing up years in your home when they leave your home, when they're 18 and they head off to do life on their own? Are they going to have good things, bad things, or nothing? You know, and so, you know, our workplaces, our neighborhoods, I mean, when you leave your job, whether you move to another job or you retire, or maybe you get let go, what is going to be said about you? And so these really get into the deeper things of what we value, and it's much deeper than just the surface level wants and desires. So last week we said, you know, that you'll never get to what you really want until you discover what it is you value. And for most of us, we struggle identifying what we value because we don't really slow down long enough to figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, listen, it's not going to be figured out because nobody's going to figure this out for you. In fact, I love Roy Disney in the book, The Disney Way. I love what he said. He said, when your values are clear, your decisions are easy. Think about that for a second. See, when we get to the place of figuring out what we value, decisions become really, really easy in life. Now, here's what's interesting about you. Here's what's interesting about me. Doesn't matter if you're a person of faith or not a person of faith, if you're religious, not religious. Here's what's true of all of us. And that is until you discover what you value, you're not going to really be able to get to the place that you really, really want to be. All right? And for those of us who are Jesus followers, we actually believe God has a hand in this. And that Jesus consistently pointed us beyond just the immediate to the deeper realm of what we value. And so Jesus kind of points the way to this. And even if you're not willing to kind of stretch that far yet, you've got to figure out, all of us have to figure out what we value. So this should be easy, right? And we should just be able to, spend 10 minutes, write it down. Here's what I value. But what we've been figuring out is it's just not that easy. And so here's what I want us to look at today. See, the problem that we run into as we're diving into this is that choosing what is valuable is not natural. All right? And so the reason that this is difficult to figure out what I value is because it's not like I can just say, well, if I just get a little more information, if I'm a little more educated on something, then I'll be able to figure it out. Well, it doesn't just come that easily. And it's not like if I'm just more disciplined, then I'm going to be able to figure it out. There's something much deeper going on right here because there's an internal conflict going on. And this is something we've all experienced. It's the conflict between what we value and what comes natural. And so most people are never able to break through what naturally I want to do or what I naturally have tendencies that I'm drawn toward in my life. And so most of us never break through that to get to the deeper level of what we value. But I tell you what, when you break through that, life begins to change. You begin to see a whole different side of life. And that's what we want for you. And I think that's what you probably want for yourself. So I think the person that maybe best describes this in the Bible is a guy that we look at very often. It's a guy by the name of Paul. He wrote more than half of the New Testament portion of the Bible. Paul was a Pharisee, and so he actually was this real religious person, but he wasn't interested at all in what Jesus was doing. In fact, he hated Christians. He was actually out killing Christians, trying to kind of kill the first century church. And then he had a change of heart, and he became a Christian. It's really this crazy story for another time. But he then begins planting and starting churches all around the Mediterranean rim, and he writes these letters to these churches. And so in these letters that he writes to these groups of Christians, this one that we're going to look at here first is to a group of people that we don't even know if he ever visited the area. It was to these people in Rome, these Christians in Rome. And see, Rome was a very, very dangerous place for Christians. Christianity was not welcomed in that community. And yet there were a lot of Christians in that area, which says a lot about what happened when Jesus, rose from the dead. The people who were there and saw it actually believed it because they literally saw it, and so that's why they're living out their faith. And so in this letter, Paul describes this conflict that he's in and that he wrestles with, and I think he puts it in terms that you and I are going to be able to understand. And this first verse I'm going to read for us in just a second, some Christians have this thing called a life verse, and if you're not familiar with a life verse, it's like this weird thing Christians do where they like pick one verse from the Bible and they're like, this verse captures like my whole life. This one verse like sums up my whole life, all right? It's really kind of weird. And it's not a bad idea, all right? It's just a really hard question to answer. Like, what's the one verse that sums up your life, all right? Well, if you don't have a life verse, this one might work for you, all right? Because this one, all of us probably relate to this in one way or another. So here's what Paul says. He says, I do not understand what I do. Some of you are like, there it is. That's the big one right there. I could put that on my home screen. I could print it out, put it on my desk, because I don't know why I do what I do. I don't understand it. And so, this is interesting because some of you don't really like the Bible or you're trying to explore God for the first time, but you like this verse. You're like, wow, I really dig that one because I don't understand why I do what I do. Because we all have a story that we could tell about some moment where we did something and we didn't know why we did it. And you don't even have to look back past like this morning, right? Like it may have already happened today. And so it's that moment when we just go, you idiot, why did you do that or say that or buy that? Or why did you say yes to her? Why didn't you say no to her? Why did you resubscribe? Why did you go back to that again? I mean, we have all these moments where we just don't understand why we do what we do. which is the whole point of what I want us to look at today as we dig into this question, what do we want? Because there's a conflict going on inside of you between what you value and what you actually naturally do. And so we realize this is a big deal, right? This isn't just like, give me a little more information, a little more discipline. And so Paul says, I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, there's our phrase right there, I do not do. And then he goes on, he says, for what I want to do, I do not do, but what I, so I don't know how long it took him to write this, all right? Because like, how do you figure out how many times you're going to say that? For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. All right, so this is huge. This is Paul being transparent right here. All right, he's saying there's things I really, really want to do, and I end up settling for less. And he says, and then as a result of that, and he uses a really big word right here, he says, I end up hating it. Now, let's be honest for just a moment. For some of us, you hate yourself. You hate yourself because of what you continue to do. And you were there the whole time. I mean, it's not like you try to blame your mom or your dad or your sister or that my boss or the president wouldn't have done this. You know, I mean, you blame people. But and Paul gets it, right? He's like, I continue to do what I don't want to do, even though I try to do the right thing, I don't do it. And here's the thing: when you hate the things that you do, you're like 1 inch away from hating the person that you see in the mirror every morning, right? And so some of us are right here, like on a regular basis. And so you understand this is a really, really big deal. It's like an everyday thing, every hour by hour wrestling match with, I don't know why I do certain things that I don't want to do. Paul then goes on, he says, and if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. Now what he's saying here, this is kind of an interesting phrase. Paul was a Pharisee. He was a Jewish religious Pharisee. And so, you know, Pharisees were rule keepers. That's what they did. They weren't interested in the grace of God, or that was a whole different thing Jesus brought. They were interested in following the rules. And what he's basically saying was, I was really good at it. I was like one of the best when it came to following the rules. In fact, I was the goodest of them all, he would have said, if goodest was a word. And so, you know, what he's saying here is when it came to the religious law, the Jewish law, which is really had all these intricacies, is very, very difficult to understand. He says, I tried to be good. I tried as hard as I could to always do what the law said and follow the rules of religion, and I couldn't pull it off. And see, I think he's talking here about when he was in his Pharisee days versus when he falls under the grace of God days. He's like, I really, really wanted to do it, and I just couldn't pull it off. And so again, we're talking about the Jewish law here. Paul, all these intricacies and different laws. For you and I, it's just like normal right and wrong, right? We're just trying to do the right thing in general situations. But have you ever noticed how fascinating it is that even though you know the right thing to do, you may not do it, but you can point it out in others when they don't do it? Have you ever noticed that? Like with your kids, my kids, they'll come to me and they'll be like, Dad, why, so-and-so is doing this and they're not supposed to, and can you get them in trouble, please? I'm like, what are you talking about? You were doing that like 3 minutes ago. Well, yeah, I know, but I want them to be in trouble. We're talking about them, not me, right? It's fascinating how even when we don't do the right thing, we know what the right thing is to do, and we can point it out easily in others. This is what Paul's talking about. He says, for I have the desire... There's our word that we just sung about in that U2 song. I have the desire, the grit to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Some of you are like, yes, that's me. That's my life right there. And see, this should make you feel better. This is Paul, who wrote more than half of the New Testament, right? I mean, if there's anybody you can relate to in the Bible, it's Paul. I mean, Jesus. Some of you are like, Jesus, I can't really relate to Jesus. I mean, Jesus is like way up here, right? Paul, he doesn't do what he wants to do. That's like my life, right? So what's the point of this right here? Here's what he's saying. He's saying we naturally are drawn to do what we don't want to do, and that's in conflict with what we value. We're naturally in this conflict between what comes natural and what I value. And so think about this for a moment. Just think about what comes natural. Think about nature. Think about Mother Nature for a moment. Right? Think about the animal kingdom for a moment. See, nature knows no fairness, right? Nature knows no compassion. I mean, the animal kingdom shows no compassion. I mean, you know, animal kingdom, survival of the fittest. I mean, there's no grace in nature. And so what this is saying is, you know, nature, the nature we see around us, the animal kingdom we see around us, you know, that there's a part of who we are that is found in nature. And so human nature or human natural or human naturally, just do whatever comes naturally. You know, it's not, you probably don't need a list of what that looks like, but here's some of the things that looks like. It's cheating, lying, adultery, racism, selfishness, revenge. I mean, if you look at this list, the human, when I just respond out of what naturally comes, then you're like, wow, it's no wonder I'm struggling in my marriage right now because I'm selfish all the time, and I've been an adulterer, or you know, I'm lying all the time. Or it's no wonder I'm struggling in my relationship with my kids. And so Paul, he says, he's the one that says, I don't understand why I do what I do. He writes another letter to another group of people in this area known as Galatia. It's known as the book of Galatians, but it's really just a letter that he wrote to these people in Galatia. And here's what he says here. Maybe you've heard this. He says, when you follow the desires, there's our word here again, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, and if you don't like the phrase sinful nature, just put nature in there, human nature, right? Because they're one and the same, you know, because for those of us who are Christians, we believe, you know, because of what Jesus said and Paul kind of elaborates on, that our nature is broken. All right, that there's something wrong with you. I mean, there's even though you were born in the image of God, you're a divine image bearer, you kind of reflect God's goodness, there's something that's happened in the fall and this thing that happened way back where our human nature was broken. All right, it's like there's poison in the well and we don't do what we want to do. And if you don't fully agree with that your human nature is broken, then just ask yourself, do I ever do something that I really don't want to do? And I don't know why I did it. To which the answer is probably yes. Well, that's because your human nature is broken. So Paul says, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, the results are very clear. And what he means here is like, you probably know exactly what they look like. He's like, I don't even need to tell you what they look like. If I had a whiteboard right here, I could just write them down. I could say, hey, what's the result of your sinful, broken nature? How have you experienced that? And I could just write the list down and you'd see that list and go, yep, that's me. And, oh, that's my ex-wife. And, you know, that's my kids do that one because there's a part of me that's in them. And so we kind of know what we're tempted to do. But Paul, he just decides to give us a list anyway. And so here's his list. Here's what he says. He says sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures. And then these next two are interesting because we don't talk about these very often. Idolatry. You know what idolatry is? Idolatry is when you put things above people. Like, don't sit on that. Don't touch that. Take your shoes off before you walk on that. I mean, this is idolatry, right? When I put things in front of people. He says sorcery, to which we were like, oh, I don't do sorcery. I mean, that's weird. That's way out there. Well, do you know what sorcery is? See, sorcery is just when you control someone else. That's all sorcery is. That's what wizards do. That's what magicians do. That sorcery is this idea of where I can get someone to do something that I want them to do. I can control their behavior. You get someone else to control their behavior. That's sorcery. He goes on. He says hostility, quarreling, jealousy. Anybody had any bouts with jealousy recently? I mean, jealousy is like where you kind of celebrate internally when someone else has a setback. You know, like maybe somebody that you know that's just financially really well off and all of a sudden you discover that they're, you know, struggling financially a little bit, or maybe somebody whose kids, you know, are kind of the model of what you want your kids to be, and their kids don't make the focus program, and inside of you, you just kind of hear that and you go, yes. And as soon as you do that, you go, oh my word, what was that? That was ugly. To which we all go, yeah, it is really ugly, right? And you're like, where did that come from? That little, like, you didn't even think about it. It just naturally came out. You know where that came from? That came from inside of you. That's where that came from, all right? Because we have these things inside of us. Or maybe somebody who's just always, like, physically fit. You know, when you run into them after the holidays and they've added a few LBs and you're like, oh, wow, they're letting themselves go a little bit, you know? And you're like quietly having a party inside of you and you're like, oh, my word, what is that? Well, you can call it whatever you want, all right? You put all kinds of different labels on it. But Paul, he says that's the sinful nature right there. That's what that is. And then he goes on. He says dissension, division, envy, drunkenness. Drunkenness, this is an interesting one. I mean, come on, listen to this. Drunkenness, all of us, we, you know, pray in this room, listening online, all of us are probably one or two relationships away in our family and our friendships from someone who has said, man, I don't want it. I don't understand why I continue to do what I do, but it's destroying my marriage, it's destroying my career, it's destroying my relationship with my kids, it's destroying my finances, but I just can't give up alcohol, or I just can't control my alcohol consumption. And let's not pile on that one too fast, because if we're honest, all of these, right, all these things, And I know you guys are good people, all right? But all of these come naturally. And there's probably one or two of these or a number of these that we could say, yeah, that actually got in the way of me getting to where I ultimately wanted to be. And so we see, man, this is a big deal, this whole thing of desires and appetites and what we naturally want versus what we value. But see, here's what I want you to know. This is a battle that can be won. All right, this is a battle that can be won. And we're going to continue to talk about this over the next few weeks. One more scripture before we wrap up this morning. So last week we looked at a guy by the name of James. And James is the literal brother of Jesus, which we always got to stop and recognize him. I mean, James wasn't a follower of his brother, Jesus, you know, early in his life. He thought his brother was crazy. It was, you know, doing all these weird things. But something changed. James became a leader in the church. And he said it was basically because his brother predicted his death and resurrection and then pulled it off. And he was like, man, if my brother can do that, he must be who he says he is. So he called him his Lord. Think about how big that is for a brother to say, I'm going to bow down to you, brother. All right, that's a big deal, right? So you know, James gives us this word picture, which I think is really helpful to us. And it was helpful to me. I think it'll be helpful to you, because regardless of what it is we struggle with on the desire level, this is gritty enough to kind of, for us to, and gives us some terminology with which to understand why the struggle is real. So here's what James says. He says, but each person, which is all of us, he says, but each person is tempted when they are, and here's the word picture, dragged away. I want to say that word together, those two words together right there. Say it with me, dragged away, right? So I'm going to read this again, because I want this to be cemented in our minds, all right? Because none of you as adults have probably ever been dragged away from anything, is my assumption, all right? But I just want us to read this. When I get to the dragged away part, you just join me right there. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away. Now, this is a huge visual picture right here, because what James is saying right here is this is somebody who's trying to do what they want to do, trying to do the right thing, trying to respond the right way, trying to engage the right way, trying to live out of what they value, what they really, really say, this is really, really important to me, and something comes along and it drags them away. It's not what they wanted, but it drags them away. And so again, we realize this struggle is real. This is one you and I are faced with on a daily basis. Paul says they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. That is, they knew what they wanted. They knew exactly what they wanted to do and living out of their value, but they were dragged away. She came along and I started dating her and she just dragged me away. He came along, I started dating him and he just dragged me away. That opportunity came along and it just dragged me away. Right, that old addiction kind of reared its ugly head. And in the end, it ended up dragging me away. And then he gives us this next picture. He says, then, after desire has conceived, and we all know what conception is, right? It's when we have something that has potential and it's fertilized. It gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. And so sin ultimately kills stuff. Sin ultimately undermines the future. Sin ultimately undermines ourselves. To where we get to the place, we go, man, I just don't understand why I do what I do. And I'm starting to hate myself. And then James, he kind of ends it this way by saying, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. He's saying, don't be deceived. It's a trap. It is a trap. It looks enticing. It looks good. It's a trap. Don't be deceived, dear brothers and sisters. Now, why does he say this at the end of this right here? My assumption is it's because he knows how easily you and I are deceived and trapped by what we think we want. He knows how easily we get very nearsighted by seeing the here and the now instead of thinking about what we ultimately want, and we just go in the direction of our natural desires. And so it's like he's reaching over 2,000 years of history, and he's like, don't be deceived. Don't. It's like he's trying to give us a heads up on this. Don't be deceived. Don't get trapped. Don't trade the ultimate for the immediate. Don't trade the ultimate for what naturally seems right, right. He's saying, students, high school students, junior high students, college students, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived by what you think you want and need right now and give up your ultimate hopes and dreams just because of what's going on right now. He's saying, you know, singles who might be living all alone in a big city by themselves without anybody walking alongside you, you know, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived thinking, well, when I get married, I'll just end what I'm doing now because I know it's not. No, just because you say I do doesn't mean you will, all right? Don't be deceived. Men and women who travel for a living, don't be deceived. Men and women who are struggling in your marriage where you're beginning to be distracted by someone else, where you're beginning to be dragged away. He's saying, don't be deceived. Don't do it. It's a trap. And so, you know, he's saying, you know, we think we know. We have these ultimate things we want to go after, but we get caught up in the natural desires. And we trade the ultimate for the immediate. You know, this past week, I was talking with a few of our team members here, a few friends about this. I said to a few of them, I said, you know, I don't know that everybody's going to enjoy this series that we're in. You know, Drive, Where We Look, We Go, because this is getting a little deeper than just, okay, what would make a few goals for the year. This gets into, like, what do I really, really want? And I think a lot of people are going to walk out frustrated because I don't know why 25% came to mind. I said probably only about 25% of us are going to really sit down during the week and do the harder work of answering the questions and digging into the journal reflection. And maybe it's more, maybe it's less, maybe it's 10%. I mean, wherever you are, I don't want to be in that top 10 or 25 or 5%, whatever it is. And so one of my friends even said, well, why do you do it then if you don't know it's only going to connect with 25%? I said, well, I don't think it's just going to connect with 25%. I think only maybe 25% of us are really going to go to a new place. But see, here's why we continue to do this. Because we want to constantly be pushing to go deeper than just the surface. And one of the things that really bothers me, I'll be really honest, is when I see lost potential in junior high students, senior high students, college students, men, women, married couples, singles, who trade the natural for the ultimate. Because whenever we give in to the natural, we always lose options in the future. That's what regret is. We lose options in the future when we choose the natural or the moment or the immediate over the ultimate. And so, you know, one of the things I've discovered over the years is that, you know, Jesus just gives us clear pathways in this. In fact, I heard it said really pithy recently in a really pithy way. You know, and whether you're a Christian or not, you know, I want you to think about this statement. Following Jesus will not only make you better at life, but it'll actually make your life better. I mean, it's just this crazy thing. I mean, Jesus, he'll actually point you past the immediate to the ultimate. Or he'll actually point you past the natural. This is what he was always doing, saying, let's go deeper. Let's go to a value level, not just the immediate level. And so this is why, even if you're not real sure about what you think about Jesus and that whole, you know, his whole gig, and if he's really who he says he is, I just want to encourage you this morning to take a baby step to do what Jesus was inviting people to do over and over and over again all the way back to the first century, and that's just to simply follow him, to just follow the way that he asks you to live, because it makes you better at life, and it makes life better. And so, because he constantly points beyond the immediate. And just to be clear, listen, I need this too. Right? I'm not void. I'm not like Mr. Miyagi up here that's like, oh, just do this and here. No, to put it in the words of James, every day, just probably like your life, every day I'm in a battle where I have to choose between what comes natural or the ultimate if I'm going to let things drag me away every single day. And I've just found that when you fix your eyes on the things that Jesus invites us into, then that's the direction. Even though we take sidesteps off it at times, that's the direction our lives begin to go. So would you just be willing to follow these things Jesus asks us to do? So here's what I want us to do this morning. All right, when you came in, Eric, did you fill out this connection card earlier? I want you to take that out. On the back side are some next steps. And we give these to you every week because I want you to think through before you leave very intentionally, what am I going to do this week? What's my next step? What's my baby step? And so one of them, the first one is just, you know, being intentional to be back next weekend, whether it's Sunday or Thursday. I mean, if you can't make Sunday, that's why we have Thursdays, because we don't want there to be an excuse that I'm out of town on the weekend or whatever. We want to give you another environment. There's also podcasts. So just, you know, if you're going to be here next weekend, make the commitment right now. Say, hey, things are going to come up. I'm going to make it intentional to be here to start my year off focusing on figuring out the things I really value. Second one, I want to ask you to answer these three questions this week, and I'm going to walk you through them real quick in a moment. And these are going to be in the app. We're going to hand them out to you here in a bit. But see, here's the thing. I said this last week. You can being here is great, and you may have taken screenshots or wrote notes today. Those are great as well, but they're kind of be worthless unless you go to the deeper level of really digging through this whole concept of what we've talked about today. All right, so here's the three questions we're going to ask you to answer this week. The first one is, what do you want? What do you really want? All right, we started there last week. I'm asking you to continue to dig on that. Some of you haven't completed it yet, all right? You can complete it this week, or maybe you started it last week, but I want you to ask the next question. When you figure out what you want, okay, well, why do I want that? Maybe you say, well, I want to hit my sales quota this year. Okay, well, why do you want that? Well, because I want to, be promoted and get a, move up in the company. Okay, well, why do you want that? Well, because I want to add value to the company. Okay, well, why do you want that? Well, I want to make more money. Okay, well, why do you want that? Well, I want to better provide for my family. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, now we're getting into the value realm. Now we're getting into things that are of value. And then we have to, I'd encourage you to ask the question, if your value is providing for your family, well, is that just financial? Or do you need to do some things, relationally or, spiritually? Do you need to step up your leadership game spiritually in your family? Because now we're talking values. All right, so you need to dig into that question. Second question really connects to what we talked about today. What keeps dragging you away? What is it that's dragging you away? See, it's a new year. And this time of year, we always think about, okay, what changes do I want to make? What direction do I want to go? And likely, whatever that is for you, you've probably pursued that before. And so the question I want you to ask is, what was it or what is it that keeps dragging me away? And be honest on this, right? This is not a time to lie to yourself. I'm just telling you, right? This is like between you and you or you and God, right? Because if your parents ask you this question, you might not be honest. And if your spouse asked you this question, you might not be honest. I mean, there's probably some things where, your spouse has said, well, honey, I really think this is hurting you. I think you need to give it up. And you've got like 25 reasons on why you shouldn't or why you don't need to give that subscription up or that thing up or why you can continue to return to that place, whatever it is. But you got to ask yourself, is that dragging me away? All right, just be honest. And then this third one. How long, this is a bit of a weird question, but how long or how much longer do I plan to allow what I naturally want drag me away from what I ultimately want? And so is it going to be another season of your life? Is it going to be another 5 years? Is it going to be another 10 years? Is it going to be like till my kids are out of my house or, another marriage? I mean, if you're single, is it going to be like, well, I know these things keep dragging me away from healthy relationships, but, once I get married, then I'll, end this thing, to which all the married people in the room go, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. I mean, because, who you are then is who you are when you get married. Just because you say I do doesn't mean you can. Just because you say I do doesn't mean you will. And so you just got to sit down and answer these questions. How much longer am I going to allow this thing to drag me away? And then next week, I'm going to give you kind of an amazing little process that I ran across years ago, but has really helped me identify value in my life. I'm going to walk you through it. This will be part of your experience next week, and I give some very practical ways to dig into that. So Van is going to lead us in a new song this morning, all right? And it's a cool song because even though you don't know it yet, or likely you don't know it, it really speaks to what we've been talking about today. And it's going to be easy for you to catch on, but sometimes, somebody will say, they'll be like, well, why do we sing so much in church? What's the singing deal? Well, see, here's what singing is. One of the things singing does is it's like we don't always know what to pray, and when we sing, it's like putting prayers on our lips. And so you may not know how to pray, but these words are like prayers. And so this is really a prayer that we want to help you pray this morning of saying, God, help me, search me, help me dig down into those things I really want. Help him clarify for me. And so we're inviting God into this process. And so let's stand. And the cool part about this is you have a heavenly Father who wants something for you, right? Not from you. He wants something for you, and he invites you to dig into this and discover this with him. So whether you're singing or you're sitting under or just reading or mouthing these words, put these words on your lips as we sing.